This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Running Explained podcast. I'm your host, Coach Elizabeth. When I started running at the age of 29, I had so many questions and what felt like nowhere to turn to for answers. So now I'm here to answer all your questions about running and running adjacent topics to help you become a better, smarter, more knowledgeable runner. Whether you're brand new or you've been doing this for a while, there's always more we can learn about running. And now you can train with Running Explained wherever you go. Check out the new Run Club by Running Explained app. The Run Club by Running Explained gives you the freedom to build your own training schedule using Running Explained training plans, including training for races, building your base, post-race recovery, running for fitness, and more, and you can swap between plans as needed. Then layer on a running-specific strength training program that matches your goals and includes plyo, core, and mobility. Plus, you have instant access to a variety of resources at your fingertips, including training guides, pacing resources, Run Fueling 101, and more. Join the Run Club Plus for a monthly live group coaching call led by me, Coach Elizabeth, plus in-app chat support and other fun inclusions. Start your 3-day free trial now at runningexplained.co/therunclub or by visiting the link in the show notes. And now let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome to the Running Explained podcast. I am your host, Elizabeth. I thank you for joining me today. This week, we're going to be talking all about when you should skip a run, when skipping a run is actually in your best interest long term versus situations where you don't want to go on your run, but you should anyways. Now, as a coach, I spend a ton of my time educating my athletes and you, the running population, about the importance of balancing training stimulus and recovery and understanding that going for your run is not always the best option. I actually spend a lot of my time, I feel like, convincing people to take the day off and then also to consistently reassure them that actually taking the day off is in their best interest because we as regular people have a ton going on in our lives and fitness culture tends to communicate to us that we should never, ever, ever take a day off for any reason. Or else our dedication and our commitment and our, you know, is all called into question and we're mentally weak. And I, as the realistic, practical, empathetic, regular person running coach, who wants you to be a healthy, fulfilled, secure, and happy individual who also enjoys running and achieving your goals, not the terrified, anxious, beaten, and broken down because you can't live up to this absolutely impossible standard of never, ever, ever taking a day off type of runner. It is in your best interest to understand when to ask this question and when to take the day off versus when actually you should go for your run. And we're going to talk all about that today. I know this will come as absolutely zero surprise to any of the coaches who are listening to this show. Hey guys, what's up? It is shockingly hard sometimes to convince runners that actually they need to take a day off, that actually taking a step back, taking an unplanned rest day, cutting their run down from a workout to an easy run or an easy run to a shorter easy run or a run to a walk or just a full rest day actually is in their best interest. And you would be surprised at me, like I've had to convince runners who are actively have a fever that they need to stay home. But this lesson, this skill of decision making is, I think, one of the most important and vital skills that we can learn as runners that is one of those life lessons or running lessons or life lessons. Because this isn't about wallowing in shame and guilt because you skipped your workout because you had a fever. Like, who does that serve? This is about understanding the context that you find yourself in and making a decision that you feel secure and confident in, whether that decision is to take an extra rest day and maybe go back to sleep or to push through and see what happens. Now, this is a skill, this decision-making process, understanding how to make these decisions, when to ask those questions, when to stay home versus when to get out there. Whether or not you are working with a coach, this is a skill that can be developed and should be developed in every single runner. Because even if you are working with a coach, I can't be there with you in your head while you are making these decisions, right? I don't live with you. And even if I were to run with you on any given day, I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know how you feel unless you tell me. So the very first step to building this skill, even if you are working with a coach who can help guide you further into understanding the context and when to make these decisions and helping you make really good decisions, the impetus has to come from within. And the better and more skilled you become at making these decisions and going through this process of understanding when should I go for my run versus when should I stay home will help you, like, as a whole person, but especially as a whole athlete. And if you are working with a coach, it will allow you to kind of level up to that next level of stuff that we work on mentally as a coach-athlete relationship, but will also be one of the most important skills that you can learn if you are doing this by yourself. And by yourself, that could mean anything from maybe you are literally writing your own training because you know how to, or maybe you're following a training plan. I hope you're not just making it up as you go along, because that's not very effective. And if you do need a plan, quick plug, yes, I have tons available, downloadable PDF plans, all the plans and programs available in the Run Club app, all access. Don't do it planless. Have a plan, have a good plan. Because understanding when it is in your best long-term interest to either stay home or go out for a run in a situation where you're on the fence or you have a question about whether you should, this is a skill that translates into many other areas of your life. I feel that it's a skill that really unlocks and opens up a lot of the other good decisions and decision-making processes that we can develop. And for me, this is really, I would say, a hallmark of a mature and self-confident athlete. And this has nothing to do with pace or actual running experience. This has everything to do with understanding your body, your mind, the context, and learning to make the best decision for your long-term goals. I conceptualize this question, this topic, as really having two main pathways. One is a physical pathway, as in it's probably not in your best physical interest to go for a run, versus more of a psychological pathway. Are there psychological blocks that are making you apprehensive about going for your run? The first step to this is learning to tell the difference between those two things. This is really the first step to lifting the lid on the black box that can sometimes be our minds and bodies and learning to really figure out, what am I actually feeling? What is actually happening in my life that could be contributing to the way that I'm feeling right now? I've talked about this on the show before. We've talked about this on other episodes. And I think we talked about it kind of most in depth with Amanda Katz on the episode about toxic fitness culture. FYI, Amanda is taking on new one-on-one run coaching clients. So if you've been waiting to work with Amanda, go ahead and set up a coaching exploration call so we can get that ball rolling. But Amanda and I talked about, well, toxic fitness culture. And one of the things that we really talked about was this idea that somehow blind dedication is an admirable trait. That the fitness culture messaging that tells you that you should never, ever, ever take a day off. And adversity is simply something you need to push through. And if you feel like crap, I don't care. Do it anyways. That's how you build mental toughness. Yeah, no. Sure, it'll teach you how to push through some really uncomfortable mental and possibly physical situations, but it actually doesn't teach you much about making good decisions and becoming confident in the decisions that you're making, because you're not making decisions. If there is no decision, if you wake up, and I'll use run streaks as an example, and if you are on a run streak, I have no opinion on that. I am sharing my personal experience and what I believe to be one of the biggest terrible downsides of a run streak. And a run streak is when you commit to running every single day, typically a minimum distance or a minimum duration. It's very common for run streaks to be a minimum of 1 mile of running per day. Now, I, in a previous life, before I was like, this does not serve me at all, and it's probably really bad for the long term of what I'm trying to accomplish, I did a run streak that's about 2.5 years in length. And the thing about, and I'll use the run streak as a really extreme example, but maybe it's you looking at your schedule and saying, hey, it's on my schedule. I'm going to do it because it's on my schedule. It's a non-negotiable, right? If you're the kind of person who says, and I hear this a lot, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. If I have a schedule, I'm really good at following a schedule. If you tell me what to do, I'll just follow it. That's not necessarily what we're trying to cultivate. Because it's not always going to be in your best interest to do the thing blindly, because for whatever reason, you get sick or you get injured or whatever it is. The other thing, the other part of this about decision making and understanding the context of all of this is that doesn't teach you how to make decisions. That doesn't teach you anything about learning how to, you know, analyze how you're feeling and making the best decision long term, because there is no decision making process. It's a non-negotiable. If you wake up and every single day you have to run at least a mile, there's no decision about that. It just is something that you do, right? So you're not actually learning anything from the experience of making decisions about how you're feeling. And maybe one day you do skip a run, the other day that you don't, and then you learn a lesson from it. And like that really, I'd say it stunts your development and growth as a runner and as a person. Notwithstanding the fact that it also encourages people to run in situations where they 100% should not be running. Like when you're sick or in really dangerous weather or when you're injured. Yeah, I've seen people run streak through all of those, and I did it personally. I'll tell you some of the weirdest stuff that I did during my run streak. I ran during food poisoning. That was so bad. Actually, twice. I ran through food poisoning twice. Separate, totally separate incidents. That was awful. I ran while injured. Thank God it didn't become a more serious injury, but I definitely ran while injured. I ran during a hurricane. I ran during a thunder and lightning storm, which was terrifying. Long story short, what I'm bringing up about this is that it was really only after I realized that the run streak was actually not serving me in a true development standpoint. Because it was forcing me to make decisions that weren't the decisions that I should be making. Because like I said, it wasn't negotiable whether I was going to run that day. And in order to really become the most effective athlete you can be, you have to understand when the most effective decision is to not go for a run or not work out. Learning to navigate uncertainty and the gray area and be confident in your decision, because it's one thing to decide, oh, I'm going to stay home today because I don't think it's in my best interest to go for my scheduled run, and then to beat yourself up about it for the rest of the day. That's not very helpful, right? So feel confident in the decision that you're making. So we're going to start unpacking this decision-making process by talking about situations in which it is not the more physical path that you are navigating down, but the more psychological path that you are navigating down, and understanding when you're actually just facing a psychological block or apprehension about your run, and when you actually should get your little butt out the door or onto the treadmill or whatever the thing is, because it is actually in your best interest to go do the thing. What does this look like, and why are we talking about it? Because running is such a mental sport. Running has such a massive component of the mental tied to the physical that just, you know, doing the physical stuff alone is not going to cut it. If you really want to become the best version of your athletic self that you can be, whatever that looks like for you, there is a huge mental component that we have to work on as well. At this point in the year of our Lord 2024, it's pretty much an accepted and long-running joke that runners, as a population, we tend to be pretty type A. We tend to have a lot of perfectionist tendencies. We tend to think that working as hard as possible guarantees achievement because it has in other areas of our life, work, school, whatever it is. Now, there are aspects of a type A personality that can absolutely help you, but there are aspects of this perfectionist type A personality which can also hinder you. The perfectionist tendencies that serve us really well, and we think in other areas of our life, can actually backfire on you in some ways as a runner. What does this look like when it's not serving you well? It looks like a refusal or kind of inability to accept anything other than the paces that you think you should be running in workouts. I see this a lot with runners who struggle to adjust to slower, easy effort paces on some runs, who beat themselves up for running, quote unquote, slower than normal, even when they're doing their runner workout completely appropriately, like you did the target. Okay, so you were a little bit slower than last week, but you executed the way you should have, right? But we're focusing on the pace. If we can't do all of the run that we're supposed to be scheduled and like having kind of a meltdown about it, right? Oh, I was supposed to run 6 miles, but I only had time for five because I had an early morning meeting this morning. I need to get that final mile in later so I can guarantee that I ran 6 miles. Like, no, you can run 5 miles. It's fine. Always needing to get to those round numbers on your watch, right? You can't let the watch stop at 4.98 miles. You have to run to five. It's not... Whenever we bring this up, and Steve Magnus, who I mentioned on the podcast last week, talks a lot about this in his work, you know, that it's not about the round number. It's about what you think the round number is doing for you versus the non-round number. And there is zero actual difference between the training stimulus that you receive from a run that is 4.98 miles versus one that is 5.00 miles. Especially because your GPS also isn't 100% accurate, right? So you, like the sense of achievement or satisfaction that you're getting from that is completely misplaced. That's the stuff that I'm talking about. Does this serve you correctly? There's a really great quote from Molly Seidel that I have been rattling around in my head for a while. It's from an interview that she did with the newspaper back in 2021. And I love this. So the interviewer asked her, the journalist asked her essentially, hey, you're Molly, you're a professional runner, you have an Olympic medal. What's your advice for the amateur? Now, the person who interviewed her and wrote this article, Dennis Young of the New York Daily News, he says, here's an observation from a few years covering elite runners and many more as a very bad runner. Pros may be particular and even superstitious, but the hardcore amateurs are generally far more anal and restrictive. Seidel agreed with that premise. Quote, I feel like a lot of pros, we do this so often, you kind of learn that chaos is the name of the game. You can very rarely control the circumstances around you, so there's no point in getting overly specific about stuff. Like, I have to have this as my pre-race meal or otherwise it won't go well. You can literally eat anything. I think a lot of amateur runners have this belief that it has to be perfect. It has to be exactly how I did it last time. And that's just not true. End quote. I mean, first of all, hi, I feel called out, but I also feel seen. And this is something that I talk to a lot of my runners about. We're all amateurs, right? I do not coach any professional runners. A lot of professional runners have the experience of racing a lot from a relatively young age. Most professional runners in this day and age start in track. and cross country in high school and many also in middle school. So by the time they reach their professional running years in their, let's say, start in their early 20s or so, they've already had maybe close to a decade of running. I can't even count how many races that they have run between three seasons. If there are three seasons, you know, cross country, indoor track, outdoor track, let's say that's 4 years in high school, 4 years in college, they've maybe ran for a bit too, and now they're like 24, 25. And they've been running how many races per year for how many years? Perfection is an illusion. And you don't have as much control as you think you do. That's kind of the first big lesson here. But the reason I bring this up in the context of the topic of should I go for my run today or not, and this first pathway of the psychological aspect of it, is that I have had a lot of experience talking to runners, and this is something that I have worked through in my own mental blocks, about feeling like I don't want to go for my run, but I don't know why. Like, oh, I really don't want to do that. And then at first, if you haven't yet untangled the difference between, you know, what's driving this, asking the question of where is this coming from? How do I really feel? You may mistake this for a physical ailment. You may mistake this for, oh, if I'm feeling this way, it must mean something's wrong and I shouldn't do it. But a lot of times when we kind of dig down into this question, we're feeling that I don't want to do this. I don't want to go for my run. I don't know. Something doesn't feel right today. Except when you go through kind of the analysis of how am I feeling? How am I sleeping? Am I injured? Have I been eating properly? Am I dehydrated? You know, all of that squared away. And we come back to the question of why don't I want to do this? The mental aspect of approaching, especially a workout, right, where we have the expectation or the desire to hit certain paces or to maintain a moderate or high intensity, right? We have a lot of expectation, or if this run needs to go a certain way or else it means XYZ. I need to hit these paces, or I need to go spend this much time being uncomfortable, right? Sustaining this high pace, or I'm going to go run for this long or this fast or whatever it is. A lot of times this comes down to anxiety around performance. It has nothing to do with physically whether you can or cannot or should or should not do the thing. It's something about the run and the potential for its outcome is threatening to your psychological safety, to your sense of self, to your confidence in your own ability, to your self-belief, to your self-efficacy. Because if you are tying the possible outcome of the future event and like your self-worth as an individual in terms of how well, i.e. how exactly you can execute a certain run or workout, and the run or workout doesn't live up to the standard that you've set, that is now a threat to all of the things that I just listed. And you can see as we kind of peel back this onion, how that seems a little, okay, that sounds a little extreme, but I guarantee you the next time that you are feeling, especially the tough ones, especially the big workouts, right? Especially as we get closer to race day, the long, long runs, the big workouts, or even just really challenging workouts or tune-up races or the race itself, that the possibility that you don't have control over what's going to happen, the possibility that you could fail is so damaging to your whole sense of self that your brain is trying to protect you by saying, well, let's just not do it at all. And those expectations are limiting you. Now, you might be the person who says, that's crazy. I would never, ever, ever miss a workout no matter what. Okay, fine. Let's say that this isn't you. Let's say that it's never crossed your mind not to do a workout just because you're feeling apprehensive about what might actually happen in the workout or on the run or in the race or the tune-up, whatever it is.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I would argue, though, that even if you've never had any of this apprehension about actually doing the workout, you have a ton of thoughts and feelings if you don't execute it the way that you think you should. If you don't hit the paces that you think you're supposed to hit. If you do hit the paces, but it was harder than you think it should feel. Or you didn't run as far as you wanted to. Or whatever the thing was, right? It wasn't literally perfect. And then you then go down this spiral of, what does this mean? It doesn't mean anything. Perfection is an illusion. Perfection doesn't exist. The best runners in the entire world know this. Perfection is an illusion. Perfection does not exist. And by you trying to be perfect, it is ultimately going to backfire on you. It will. You cannot perfectionism your way to your goals. You can get really frustrated on your way to your goals by attempting to become perfect with everything that you do. It's just not realistic. Perfection is illusion. Control is an illusion. You do have control over a lot of things. You do not have control over everything, and you have to learn the difference. The other thing, too, that I really have seen happen in this is that once an athlete has set the expectation that they should be performing in a certain way, and then they don't, that can lead to a pretty significant spiral and like almost instant loss of confidence. And then that typically has a snowball. If let's say there's a key workout, first time you're doing big section of goal pace, for whatever reason, it didn't meet the expectation that you had set for yourself. Like you expected it to look and feel a certain way, to run certain paces, for those paces to feel a certain way, and that didn't happen. Kind of doesn't matter how far off you were, because this type of thinking tends to be very black and white. And we're really trying to tease out the shades of gray here. Because the catastrophizing that a lot of athletes do when their run or workout wasn't, from their perspective, perfect, that somehow becomes something where it's like disaster is looming. I'm kind of exaggerating, but I'm also not exaggerating. I've had conversations with athletes where one workout that was ever so slightly off the pace, but was absolutely still within the pace range we were targeting, had a complete like catastrophic meltdown. Because it's not about the running. It's about the value that you have tied into what performing in a certain way means for you as a person and as a runner. And then it snowballs from there. Even if you're response isn't catastrophizing or having a total meltdown, if you are placing huge emphasis and importance on always performing in a certain way or else, when the or else happens, what happens? The next run, okay, now you're feeling kind of crappy about yourself. Now you feel not great. You kind of feel like maybe you're not doing as well as you should be. There's that should word again. And what this can lead to is essentially getting to a place where your brain says to you, I'm not going through all of that again, so we're just not going to do it. You're just not going to do it. And then you get that feeling of, I don't want to do this. But why? Because you have implicitly linked your worth to your performance. So if you don't live up to the performance standards that you have implicitly or explicitly stated that you are aiming for, then your literal self-worth is impacted and your brain's going to say, I'm not going through that again. We're not doing that. So we're not going to do it. So then you get this weird anxiety about workouts and then they become even more important, right? And what do we know when we put more pressure on ourselves to perform in a certain way? Most times it actually backfires because it's more stress, more expectation. And then it just kind of gets in this weird, awful, negative spiral where now we are dreading going on workouts. The really tricky thing about this, though, is that it's rarely such a linear path. The athletes that I work with who have this sense of self-worth and their kind of value as a runner and belief in themselves tied to always performing in certain ways, whether in a workout or in the number of runs they do every week or the number of miles that they run in a week or whatever the kind of criteria, because this is such like I said, it's a very black and white thing. So you can have, all you need is essentially one good day to restore all of the faith that you've lost and one quote unquote bad day to take away all of that belief in yourself. That's a horrible seesaw, wishy-washy, unstable way to live, much less to go through your training. I have also seen this happen with very specific types of training. I have seen athletes be essentially really terrified or apprehensive about doing specific types of workouts, like specific, you know, types of speed work or, I hate this type of workout. I hate tempo runs, right? Or I hate hills or whatever the thing is. It's probably because you've at some point had some sort of negative feedback loop experience with performing and the expectation of performance in those conditions or in that environment. It's very fun, I know, complex kind of, hey, let's pull back the curtain and kind of tease some of these things out. So what can you do to figure out, is this me? Is this valid for something? Is this going to be helpful for me? If you find yourself asking yourself, should I go for my run today? I don't want to, or I don't feel like I should, or for whatever reason, and we're not actively sick, right? We'll talk about like when you shouldn't go for a run, if there's a doubt in your mind next. But there's nothing technically wrong that you can think of, so to speak, but you don't want to, or you think you shouldn't, or maybe you're looking for an excuse not to. I would ask yourself this very simple question. What am I afraid of? What am I afraid of? Now, by and large, the answer to this question is going to be something that is ephemeral or something that is more tied to your belief about your self-worth rather than to anything that's actually of danger to you. Unless you answered like stray dogs or earthquakes, in which case this is a different conversation. I'm afraid that I won't be able to hit my target paces today. Okay, so what? Well, for a lot of people, the answer is, well, that means that I am not progressing the way that I want to and my goals are out of reach and I'm a failure because I'm not, whoa, like, okay. Might be an extreme example for some people, but I've seen that path slide quickly down into that, oh, and I'm a failure. I'm not kidding, right? We're very, very, very hard on ourselves, people. It's okay. I'm teaching how to be nicer to yourself. I am afraid that it's going to hurt. And I'm not talking about injury pain. I'm talking about that, especially for higher intensity work. I'm talking about this, that discomfort, that suffering, that trying to maintain a really hard pace when your entire brain and body is telling you, just stop. Right? I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid I don't want to feel that way. Right? I'm afraid I'll be uncomfortable. I'm afraid I won't be able to do it. I'm afraid I won't be able to, whatever it was. What are you afraid of? That's the thing, because that's the question you really should be asking, because it really does tie back to, it's not about your performance. It's not about your fitness. It's about how you perceive the very, very, very narrow definition of success that you've assigned to that run or workout, how that you have then applied to like your success and failure as a runner. It's okay to have a workout that sucks. It doesn't mean anything about you as a person or as a runner. the greatest runners in the world have bombed workouts. I do not train with them, but they're human, so they do. Do they let that completely derail their entire sense of self-worth? No. They know that's part of the process because perfection is an illusion. So what can you say to yourself in this situation where there's nothing technically wrong except an anxiety or apprehension about performing in a certain way and that makes you want to find an excuse to not go on your run? Identify the fear. What am I afraid of? Or fears might be more than one thing. What am I afraid of? And then ask yourself, okay, if that were to happen, what would that actually mean? I'm afraid of going on this run because I'm afraid that I won't be able to hit my goal paces. And if I don't hit my goal paces, that means that I am not on track for my race and I'm not going to hit my goal. And okay, but and then what? Got to play it. A lot of these anxieties and apprehensions that we have around performance are, when you really dive into them, kind of nonspecific. Like there's no actual literal outcome other than I'll feel bad, right? Which feels bad. It's awful to feel bad, but it's not an actual threat to your physical safety. It's not an actual threat to your standing in society. Your friends aren't going to abandon you because you didn't PR when you said you were going to try to, right? Gotta play it forward. But then you might say to yourself, but Elizabeth, I have a very high standard for myself. And when I set my mind to something, I achieve it. I am not questioning your dedication and I'm not questioning your ability to commit to something and to go after a goal. What I am questioning in this situation is why you are tying your self-worth to your performance. That's it. Can't do that. I mean, you can, but it's not going to end well. I don't want to go on this run because I have a fear. Identify the fear. Ask yourself, all right, so if that happens, then what? So what? Now what? Is it actually a big deal? I'm going to tell you, as a coach, if you try, you have succeeded. Confronting these fears, anxiety, and apprehensions are one of the most important skills we can learn as runners when it comes to developing our mental game. This is a huge, huge, huge learning opportunity for you as a runner to get comfortable living in that gray area and learning to let go of what you think you quote unquote should be doing or trying to achieve perfection in your running. This is going to be a messy process. It's not going to happen overnight. But as soon as you start teasing apart and unpacking where some of these things come from, this is going to unlock a whole next level of your relationship with the sport, with performance, with your body, with your brain. It will allow you to really develop the mental toughness and mental strength that you are trying to cultivate. So when it comes to being apprehensive or not wanting to go for one of your runs because there is an underlying kind of performance-based fear, anxiety around what may or may not happen, this is a really, really, really great learning opportunity. What am I afraid of? What does that actually mean for me? What if it did happen? So what? What can I do instead? All right, one of those feel the fear and do it anyways moments. There is a huge difference between a runner who can say, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to go try my best. And the runner who says, if I don't do this perfectly, I am a failure. The real growth opportunity comes from taking the risk and not beating yourself up about it. Allowing yourself to take risks and allowing yourself to fail. I hate that word fail. Allowing yourself to not be perfect and being okay with it and learning and striving and growing from there. The other road, right? Remember I said there are two roads. There's the psychological, you know, anxiety, perfectionism. I don't want to go in this run, but there's nothing technically wrong. I just don't want to do it because I'm, I don't know, apprehensive about the outcome and what it might mean. You may not even realize, like I said, that that's what's happening if you don't want to go on one of your runs. But if you dig down, that might be the case. The other road that I'm talking about is I don't want to, or I'm not sure if I should go on this run because of the kind of physical state that I find myself in. Now, the really obvious one for this is you're sick. I'm sick. Should I still go for my run? Probably not. Can't gain fitness if all of your resources are tied up with trying to heal you from the plague. And additionally, if we engage in very stressful situations like endurance exercise, in a state where our bodies are already depleted, we could prolong the illness, interfere with our recovery, and then really screw up the training cycle. Because when you are sick, the most important thing you can do as a runner is to get better as fast as you possibly can. And typically that involves extra recovery and rest, not training no matter what. Here, my hard stop non-negotiable, you absolutely should not be running today because you are this type of sick criteria. You have a fever of any kind. You have some sort of sinus infection, a respiratory illness, you're coughing a lot, any sort of wheezing, right? Struggling to catch your breath, or like a deep phlegmy, like you got pneumonia or bronchitis. No. COVID at any level, even if you're symptom free, if you're testing positive for COVID, that's a no. Any sort of gastrointestinal issue, vomiting, other end, no. Why? Why would you do this to yourself? Why would you try to drag yourself through a run when you are actively sick? No. Go home. Stay home. Wait until you feel better. This isn't medical advice. This is me as your coach telling you no. But what about mild colds? What if you're like, I just have a little bit of sniffle, a little bit of dry cough. I'm not even sure it's a cold. Maybe it's allergies. Well, if it really truly is that mild, see how you feel. I would probably knock down any big workouts into mostly easy runs unless you know for sure, like, no, I feel fine. There are some situations where if you are very mildly ill, like a mild cold, it's kind of the big situation and kind of the only one I can think of. A mild cold can be okay to run with, but that also assumes that everything else feels pretty okay on your run. I'll give you an example of this. Let's say that you wake up with a mild cold, kind of like a runny, sniffly thing. You're not having trouble breathing at all, but you're like, oh, I think I'm getting a cold. And you go for a run and actually you feel fine. Like the phlegm kind of clears up and you feel really good and your heart rate's in the right place and nothing's kind of off. And you're like, all right, cool. That's fine. Another situation where you wake up, you kind of have a mild cold. I'm going to try for my run and see how it feels. And your run feels bad. Your heart rate's really high. You feel really sluggish and fatigued. Your body's trying to tell you something. And that something is, I'm more sick than you realize. We need to go home and recover. And by that, I mean take a couple extra days off. I am a big believer in the attack your thing with as much acute recovery as you can, right? I'm a big believer in, hey, let's just shut it down for a couple days. There is zero risk to this and huge reward. Anything essentially other than a very, very mild cold, which has zero impact on how you're actually feeling while you run, everything else should really be taken with a extra rest day or a couple extra rest days, depending on your symptom progression. Typically, missing up to a week of training has absolutely zero impact on needing to modify your training plan. If you are sick for more than a week, especially if you're training for a race, it may be worth looking at modifying your plan and modifying your goal, depending on how sick you are and how much you actually miss. If you miss up to a week, you can typically just resume your training plan, just skip over what you missed. If we miss more than a week, we're in that 10 to 14 day, I've now missed 10 to 14 days of training. First of all, that's a really serious sounding illness. Take it seriously. And also, don't just jump back into training. That's not going to be in your best interest. For runners who have workouts, fast running, speed work, tempos, goal pace, long run workouts in their training, the recommendation would be at minimum to return to a week of only easy running to start before adding back in your training. You may also choose to reduce your volume a little bit, depending on how you feel. For those of you who have a training plan comprised of entirely easy running, finish strong style plans, right? Maybe it's like easy running and some strides or hill sprints. You're going to want to reduce your volume because you can't reduce intensity anymore, right? Because you're doing almost all easy running anyways. You probably reduce your volume a little bit, depending on how you're feeling and how long you were out. 25 to 50% volume reduction before adding back in. You might say to me then, but Elizabeth, that interrupts my plans for my race. I know it sucks, but again, things we do or do not have control over. And sometimes that thing is getting sick, how sick we are, needing to take time off. Okay. So a road, going down the road of the physical thing, if you're sick, nope, stay home. If you're injured, any injury that is changes your gait, causes you to limp, or you're like, oh, but if I run with this weird side hop, it doesn't hurt anymore. No, go to a sports physical therapist. That's no, just don't run into any injury that causes you to limp or change your gait in any way. Absolutely not. Go see a physical therapist. Any injury that gets worse as you continue throughout your run, stop it. You're making it worse. It's getting worse because it's getting worse. Stop it and go home. Make an appointment with a physical therapist. Anything that's really mild and doesn't get worse as you run, typically okay. However, please consult with your physical therapist. Any sort of bone injury? No, absolutely not. Stress fractures? Uh-uh. Don't do it. You're running on broken bones. I don't care. Don't, absolutely do not do it. You could cause permanent damage if you took this to the limit. If a medical provider has told you not to run, don't run. But beyond the obvious illness and injury, which I do actually have to say don't run when obviously sick or injured, because a lot of you are going to try to, again, because we're stuck in that I always have to be actively working towards my goals. I can't ever skip a day. I can't ever take a day off because of all the things that we've just been talking about. Self-worth, expectation, fitness culture. If you're sick, you need to stay home. If you're injured, seriously injured, you need to stay home. What about the other kind of non-specific stuff? This is the stuff that I spend the most time in the one-on-one coaching space, really helping my athletes understand the impact that life has on their training. And the really challenging thing about this is that oftentimes when we're in this really weird gray area of like, there's not anything specifically wrong, we're just trying to identify the accumulation of specific life stressors and how it's impacting how we feel right now. There's often an accompaniment of the psychological aspect of this too, the perfectionism, the expectation, the self-worth that is then tied into making these decisions. Your training doesn't happen in a vacuum. Everything in your life affects how you perform. And I really, really, really want you to understand the holistic impact that all of the stressors that you have in your life right now, acute and chronic, influence your ability to train or perform in the way that you are trying to do. A huge one that I see is runners really struggling to understand the impact of sleep deprivation and acute life stressors on how they're performing and their ability to train safely. The reason I bring this up is because most people are completely unaware of how much the other stressors that they have in their lives impacts their ability to train and perform in a certain way. And one of the things that I do as a coach is really help you connect the dots on all of the life stuff to performance, right? So let's say you do have a workout and you bombed it, right? We've all been there. And you're beating yourself up and reading into your self-worth and, you know, saying, oh my God, my upcoming race is going to be a disaster. I suck. It sucks. I'm losing fitness. The world's ending. And then we kind of dig into like, tell me what's going on in your life right now. And maybe you've been up with a sick toddler for 3 nights in a row on top of solo parenting because somebody else is out of town. Oh, and also there's a huge shuffle at work and now your manager is somebody who you absolutely hate. Well, hello. I think that, I mean, any one of those alone would be enough to say, yeah, that would probably impact how you were performing in your workout today. Don't dismiss these things. I'm not trying to turn you into a victim who's making excuses. I'm trying to help you understand the impact that other areas of your life have in your training. Because if you are sleep deprived, if you are dehydrated and or underfueled, if you are dealing with a highly stressful situation at home or at work or at school, all of those things will impact your ability to dedicate resources to training and to performing a certain way in your training, i.e. you have less of them, so your performance will likely be impacted. Maybe just a little bit, and in really significant cases, by quite a lot. The problem is not that you are experiencing life, because you're a human. The problem is not understanding the role that your life plays in your running and misplacing or misassigning, I'm going to say, blame on the outcome of your run or workout, not taking into consideration the life stuff. Let's start with sleep deprivation or sleep loss. You do not have to be up for 72 hours straight in order for lack of sleep to impact kind of everything. Sleep is the foundation of everything else. And this is something where if you are not getting enough sleep, can definitely snowball into other areas of your life. And also on the flip side, if other areas of your life are absolutely bonkers, it typically impacts your ability to sleep. But we have a ton of research that looks at lack of sleep or sleep loss, not enough sleep, on just how kind of immediate that impact is on you as a person. Now going through, we're going to talk about the life stress stuff and some of the research findings on how this impacts you. This isn't to say that if you are experiencing any of these, that you should like skip your run no matter what. What I'm saying is that it's helpful to understand the context of, well, if you have kind of one of these things going on and it's pretty low key, you know, yeah, it's probably okay to keep training as long as everything else feels fine. If you're experiencing kind of multiple confluences of these life stressors, and again, is kind of compounded by the fact that you also are feeling it physically, then yeah, probably okay and recommended to maybe take an extra recovery day, to take a few days off, right? That acute recovery, or manage those external stressors. However, that seems to be the trickier thing. A lot of us don't have a lot of control over those other things in our lives, but we do have control over our training. In this section, I'm going to talk about and reference a bunch of studies or even quote from studies that I may not explicitly mention because there are dozens, but I will do as a link in the show notes so you can take a look. All right, let's talk about sleep loss. So habitual sleep loss, defined as less than 6 hours of sleep per night, is, quote, negatively associated with psychological well-being, cognitive plasticity, and mental and physical health, end quote. This is from naturally occurring consecutive sleep loss and day-to-day trajectories of affective and physical well-being from 2022, published in the Annals of Behavioral Medicine. Really fun stuff on sleep in here. What else do we know about sleep? Some of you might be saying, wait, what? It's less than 6 hours? I never sleep more than 6 hours. Then technically, according to the National Sleep Foundation and the American Academy of Sleep Medicine and Sleep Research Society, you're technically in a state of, that's not enough sleep. Now, I'm not here to tell you that you need more or less sleep. I'm saying, based on the research that we have available, routinely getting less than 6 hours of sleep per night, and I even think some researchers would go so far as to say less than 7 hours of sleep per night, especially for very active individuals like, hello, runners, that's going to negatively affect you, short and long term. What's the long term stuff? This is typically the stuff that we like kind of say, yeah, I know, but I don't actively seeing it. It's not actively affecting me right now that I can see. So like, I'm not going to really worry about it. We humans are terrible at like not really fully understanding the long term impacts or implications of something. It's just part of being human, my friend. Sleep loss negatively impacts daily well-being. Yes, of course. And unfortunately, this gets worse the older that you get. In middle-aged adults, shorter sleep duration is associated with higher negative affect, lower positive affect, more psychosocial stressors, more cognitive interference, e.g. ruminative thoughts, and lower mindfulness the following day. Let's define some of these terms. Rumination is in psychology involves repetitive thinking or dwelling on negative feelings and distress and their causes or consequences. So if you find yourself, this is also like some people are more prone to rumination than others, but if you find yourself in a pattern of like sleep deprivation or sleep loss, got some other stuff going on, and you're kind of in this trapped in this cycle of like negative rumination, like you can't let something go, there's a reason for that. Lack of sleep is affecting this and increasing your likelihood that you'll experience ruminative thoughts or other cognitive interference. Also defining affect. Affect in psychology is the outward expression of feelings or emotions, like tone of voice, literally your facial expressions, kind of how you present your emotional state to the world. So higher negative affect, lower positive affect. When we look at sleep duration, shorter sleep duration in college students is associated with worse daily mood and lower perceived energy. If we look at sleep duration in youth with musculoskeletal pain, shorter sleep duration is associated with higher next morning pain intensity. So there's obviously a big psychological, emotional, mental, and physical knock-on effects from sleep loss, even just a few nights. This study specifically, naturally occurring consecutive sleep loss and day-to-day trajectories of affective and physical well-being, specifically looked at the effect of sleep deprivation over multiple nights and how symptoms and self-reports changed from day to day. So they took a bunch of people and essentially intentionally told them to not sleep very much and told them how much to sleep, 4 hours, 6 hours, and then take and then keep diaries and journals, and they crunched the data and looked at this. And probably to nobody's surprise, quote, as expected, consecutive sleep loss was associated with increases in negative affect, decreases in positive affect, and increases in the number and severity of physical symptoms. Results suggest that not only having just one night of sleep loss or more nights of sleep loss on average, but also having consecutive nights of sleep loss in a row has negative consequences on daily affective and physical well-being, end quote. So, I mean, the kind of summary of all of this is sleep loss isn't great, but it's really not great if you have it multiple nights in a row. And like I said, kind of the knock-on effect, the snowball effect of things like sleep loss have is it affects your actual like functioning, the decisions that you make. Sleep deprivation can affect your metabolism, your thyroid, cortisol. It can affect how you feel about things. It can affect your response to exercise. Like, it is kind of a big deal about whether or not you're getting enough sleep. That's one place to start, right? So if we're already setting the foundation for the context that your training is occurring in, and the foundation is a little bit shaky when it comes to sleep, that's already information that you can use and say, all right, thinking about the context of my training, all the other stressors I have in my life right now, is it a good idea for me to go for this run or not? Or should I take a rest day instead?
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Other life factors, stress, not just the sleep deprivation stuff, but like actual psychological stress. A study done in 2019, in the Journal of Sports Medicine and Physical Fitness, effects of acute psychological stress on athletic performance in elite male swimmers. Now, yes, I know these are swimmers, and I think they're all college students, if I'm reading those correctly. Long story short, they took 23 elite male swimmers. They stressed them. Acute psychological stress provocation And then they measured performance. And they also looked at things like serum lactate and salivary cortisol and testosterone. Quote, race speed was significantly slower following the acute psychological stress provocation than under control conditions. So that's acute psychological stress. What about mental fatigue? Well, yeah, mental fatigue impairs physical performance in humans. That's the title of this article in the Journal of Applied Physiology. Research is done by Samuel Marcora. He is a quite prolific and famous researcher in the endurance and exercise physiology world. He has a ton of really incredible work out there. And this is looking, so in 2009, he published this study with some co-authors. Again, mental fatigue impairs physical performance in humans. Have you ever had the experience of having a really, just like a really long day, a long day at work, a long day at school, just like a lot of stuff that you were thinking about, had to go through, had to work on, and your then desire to go run or do a workout at the end of the day after all that? It's typically low. Now, some people thrive in that. They're like, no, I love working out after work or after school. Like, it allows me to clear my head. That's awesome. However, mental fatigue can and often does negatively impact performance. Quote, mental fatigue is a psychobiological state caused by prolonged periods of demanding cognitive activity and characterized by subjective feelings of tiredness and lack of energy. The effects of mental fatigue on cognitive performance and the skilled performance of drivers and air pilots have been extensively investigated. An increasing number of studies are also revealing the neural alterations caused by prolonged periods of demanding cognitive activity in both health and disease. The main aim of the present study was to confirm experimentally the hypothesis that mental fatigue impairs physical performance in humans. End quote. They did this as a time to exhaustion test and found it was done with cyclists. This original, this study was done on cyclists. Long story short, you can read this. It's absolutely going to be linked in the show notes. Mentally fatigued participants performed significantly worse on the time to exhaustion test. And they also rated their perception of effort during exercise to be significantly higher. So not only did they didn't perform as well. They also said it felt harder, which is a place that nobody really wants to be in, right? Like, oh, I'm slower and it feels harder. That can be the result of mental fatigue, right? So think about all of the kind of the mental fatigue, the cognitive load that you are carrying, and think about the fluctuations in that and how that could have an impact on how you're feeling and performing in your training. And I'm not even going to expand on the, you know, effects of underfueling or insufficient nutrition or dehydration can have. We've covered that extensively with many of the registered dietitians who've been on this show before. You know, is not good. So where does this leave us? The reason I want to bring this up is because it seems to be kind of a fundamental misunderstanding of the impacts that your life have on your training. Because we've normalized, and we talked about this with Amanda Katz on the episode on toxic fitness culture, we have normalized, by necessity, living in this state of essentially moderate to high life stress all the time. Because it's just how our world works. We have a lot of demands on our time, on our emotions, on our cognitive functioning. We have to navigate through this world as a partner, as an employee, as a friend, as a parent. And also we are trying to do this relatively time intensive, performance dependent thing with our running. It's a lot to handle. Now, I don't say this to you and kind of bring this to your attention to freak you out. I just want you to understand that when you have a lot going on in your life, even if it's something that feels like, but my life is always like this. I'm like, well, then you always have a lot going on in your life. Your bandwidth for training is reduced. It's completely okay, acceptable, and I would argue preferred that if you find yourself in a period of life where you have all of this other stuff going on in your life, your the work stuff is crazy, or school or home, or whatever it is that you're going through. There's sleep issues there. Mentally, there's just a lot going on, the fatigue. It's okay to step back from training, either in a, you know, I'm just going to reduce my training a little bit for this week. I'm going to take an extra rest day. I'm going to adjust my goal, because, again, you have finite resources for training and all the other things that you do in your life. And if you are dedicating more resources to the other stuff, the life stuff right now, you have fewer resources to dedicate to training. This is also another reason why you absolutely should never, ever, ever judge yourself based on what somebody else is doing or what you think somebody else is doing or has going on. Now, we love a good story as humans. We love to hear stories or examples of athletes who are like have crazy other stuff going on in their life and are performing at a really high level. You know, somebody who's like a full-time neurosurgeon who also is an Olympic trials qualifying merit. Like, yeah, okay, those people do exist, right? But that's not the norm. Just because somebody else has managed to stuff 28 hours of things into a 24-hour day along with their training doesn't mean that that's something that you should strive for or think is going to be also beneficial for you. You know, I always wonder about the sustainability of those types of things, because we can do bonkers things for a very short period of time. And for a very short period of time, sometimes that means a year, 2 years, 3 years. But for most of us, what we're trying to do is cultivate a decades-long healthy balance with the relationship between training and going after our goals and also living our life. So if you find yourself in a situation where you got a lot of stuff going on in your life and you're not feeling awesome and you're wondering, would I be better served today by doing an easy run instead of a workout, going for a walk instead of a run, or maybe just taking a total rest day? That is an incredible first step into the skill of making those decisions about the balance between training and life. And no, you don't need to wake up every single day and say, based on the cumulative stress in my life, would today's run be a good idea? Well, I'll step back and say, if you find yourself having that conversation every single day, maybe it's not, right? Maybe you should be taking a small step back from what your training goals are or trying to manage stress in other areas of your life. But like I said, you know, other areas of our life are typically not areas where we have a ton of control over, but the training we have ultimate control over. That is something we have control over. So that's something that you can manipulate when needed. It's not going to do you any good if you try to push through and train as if you have no stress when you have a ton of life stress going on, get totally burned out, go down that negative rumination spiral of I suck, this sucks, everything sucks, and then it sucks, right? It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then your confidence is hit. And then we kind of tie back into that self-worth, that self-efficacy. Who am I? What am I trying to achieve? What does this mean about me as a striver? As somebody who has these goals they want to achieve. This is really tricky because there is no hard and fast, if you're feeling like this, then you should do this. In some cases, it's completely okay to train through periods of high life stress. It really is up to you to become a student of yourself, to understand when you should push yourself a little bit more versus when you should back off a little bit more. By and large, I would say, as we wrap up this episode, I would say I am about, for every one time I recommend that you feel the fear and do it anyways, I have about 9 times where I say, yeah, it sounds like maybe we should take a rest day or knock this down, do a cross training day or do an easy run instead of a workout. By and large, you runners are really, really great at running yourselves into the ground. And I'm here to remind you that just taking a little step back sometimes actually will help you move forward in the long run, because that's really what we're trying to accomplish here.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget, you can always find and follow me on Instagram at Running Explained. And if you're looking for a coach or a training plan, check me out. Visit my website, runningexplained.co. That's runningexplained.co. See you next time.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you have regarding a medical condition.